series called Manifestation for the past few weeks. Today's our last Sunday in this series. I'm going to start something brand new next week. You want to make sure that you're here for that because we're going to be talking about how to be a real mature individual, okay? And I think it's going to be really important. So anyway, but we're finishing up our series today in this series called Manifestation. And we've been using this word because it's a word that the Apostle Paul uses in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 7. I want to jump right into that and show you that verse on the screen right here. Once again, we've seen it every single week for the past few weeks. So here it is again. Paul says in 1 Corinthians, "Now to each one, the manifestation of the Spirit is given for the common good." See, what this verse tells us is that God is at work in every individual believer who wants to follow Jesus. Every single person who would say, "Jesus is my Lord and Savior. Jesus is the master that I'm trying to follow." Every single person who is a believer in him is part of the everyone, the each one in this passage. And so Paul is saying to every single individual, God's Spirit is given. The manifestation is the word he uses. This word means a complete and total revelation, to have full awareness, full understanding. It's as if he's right there and I can reach out and touch him. That's what the word basically means. This manifestation, this full awareness, full reality of God's Holy Spirit in my life. Now that's amazing. That's powerful. See, we started this whole series a couple weeks ago with this dilemma that we face. And the dilemma is that we all want to know our purpose, and we all want to live lives of power. But we never get both of them at the same time if we ever get one of them. The dilemma is sometimes I know my purpose, but I don't feel powerful enough to do it. I feel weak in some way. Or maybe I feel strong, but I don't have a clue what I'm supposed to be doing. And so we find those dilemmas, and most of the time we just don't really know what we're supposed to do or how we're even supposed to do it. And so this verse is the verse that we went to say, no, God is okay with those moments when you feel weak and aimless. In fact, God likes it when you feel weak and aimless, because that way he can give you the power that's his. See, he knows that you and I aren't capable to do the things that he's created us to do. He's made us intentionally less than we need to be so that we could rely on him to become more than we could possibly be. That's what God wants to do in our lives. He wants to give us the purpose and the power for our lives. And it all begins with this awareness that for those people who would call themselves followers of Jesus, believers in him, he is giving the manifestation of his own Spirit. But there's one other thing that we need to remember from this verse. And it's that God might give the Spirit to you, but it isn't for you. God might give the Spirit to me, but he's not for me. See, the manifestation of the Spirit is given for the common good. So that means when God gives his Spirit into me, he has given it to me for you. Somehow, the Spirit needs to move through me to get to you. And vice versa, when he's given the Spirit to you, it's not for you, it's for me and the others in this room. And so God has given the Spirit to you, but it's not for you, he's for the common good. And so we've learned a few things. I want to do a little bit of review with you over the last few weeks, okay? So the first week, we learned this principle that everyone who's a believer receives a gift from God. The second week, we also learned that principle, but the second week we got on top of it a little bit more with, if I use my gifts and let you use your gifts, everyone gets better. We all get better, we all improve, and we all experience God's blessings a little bit more. If I use my gifts and you use your gifts, and I let you use yours and you let me use mine, then we all grow. But then we spent 3 weeks looking at some specific gifts, some specific manifestations of God's Holy Spirit that show up in the New Testament especially. And so we looked at sign gifts, we called them. Sign gifts are those miraculous things like miracles or healing or prophecy or words, speaking in tongues, things like that. We looked at some of those things, and it's online. You can listen to that message from a couple weeks ago if you want to hear more about that stuff. But the most important thing we learned is that even though these gifts are like sign gifts and they give us a picture of God in a very vivid way, they are not nearly as important as the massive sign gifts that are called faith, hope, and love. That the best evidence for God in this world is not whether or not you can do a miracle. The best evidence for God in this world is there faith and hope and love? And if there is, that's the evidence that God is at work in this world. And if faith, hope, and love is in you, that's evidence that God is at work in you. And that's the thing we learned that week. And then after that, we looked at a different category of gifts. We called them skill gifts. And skill gifts is basically just us realizing that every single thing I can do is something that has come from God. Every single thing that I can do is something that has come from God. And so rather than trying to figure out what are the individual things that God has given me, what we do is we say, okay, everything is from God. So therefore, what I need to do is I need to let my skills become spiritual gifts by living in faith that they have come from God and using them in faith for God. Because listen, everything in my life I owe to Him. And therefore everything in my life is in some measure spiritual. And so all I need to do is live in faith that I've received what I've received from Him, live in faith doing what I can do for His kingdom, and my ability becomes a spiritual gift to the people around me. Does this make sense? And then the third thing we looked at last week is that leaders themselves are our spiritual gifts, that God has given leaders into my life that I might become the person I'm supposed to be, and that all of us together might become the people we're supposed to be. So we've covered all this ground, but there's one topic we haven't covered. And I think it's an important topic, but we haven't covered it yet because it wasn't time yet. Today's the time. The topic is, how do I figure out what gifts are mine? How do I figure out what gifts are mine? A couple weeks ago, I kind of made fun of something called a spiritual gifts inventory. And maybe you've heard one of these things before. Or maybe you were here when I was talking about it. And I told you that I would never give spiritual gifts inventories because I think they're crazy. I'll just tell you a brief little story. Okay, so when I was in seminary, seminary is the college, post-college education for pastor-type people. So it's like graduate school after college for pastor-type people. It's a three-year program for me. Anyway, so I was in seminary, and towards the end of my seminary time, I took this test. And the funny thing about any sort of test that is trying to evaluate you is that it's some person who doesn't know you trying to evaluate you through some scientific research that they've done. But here's the fascinating thing. What scientific research can be done about spiritual gifts? I mean, you can't do psychological profiling to figure out who might have the gift of prophecy or who might have the gift of healing, because that's not something you can identify in a test. And so I was taking this test my senior year of seminary, and the test was trying to evaluate kind of what type of person I should be in ministry. And so I took this test, and I came back and I talked with the counselor guy who was there, and he looked at my numbers, looked at all the things, and you know, I'm kind of a nerd, and so I'm also trying to answer the questions the way that I'm supposed to answer the questions. You know, because we all doing that. But anyway, so I'm sitting across the table with this guy evaluating my answers. And he says to me, Jeff, you're not a preacher. And I was like, what? I'm in training. I've been 3 years to become a pastor kind of thing. What do you mean I'm not a preacher? He says, yeah, you're not really gifted to be a preacher. You're gifted more to be a presenter. And I remember scratching my head thinking, what is that all about? Now, granted, you got to remember, this is like in 2000. Okay, so it's like a long time ago, this is like 17 years ago, and this guy was telling me that I really was better suited to, you know, like making PowerPoint presentations. And so, yeah, sure, I like the technology. I got something on the screen right now, you know, but so anyway, I don't know what he meant by that. He just said, you're not really a preacher. You're more of a presenter. And then later on that month, I got nominated to be one of the top preachers in my senior class. And we went through this competition and I didn't win. Steve Anderson won. Steve Anderson. But no, he was great. It was actually pretty phenomenal. And I was like, dude, that, yeah. So anyway, so Steve won. I didn't come in first place. Who knows who came in second place? But here's the deal. I don't know what you think about me and my ability to teach or whatnot. And I don't know what the paper that I took tried to communicate and what the difference is between a preacher and a presenter. And frankly, I don't care. I just hope we go away from today all knowing something. Okay, that's my hope. I just hope we all go away from today knowing a little bit more and maybe being a little bit better at actually doing it. Okay, so that's what we're all in this for together. But how do I discover my spiritual gifts? Do I take a test? Do I talk to someone? Do they evaluate me? What do I do? Well, as a matter of fact, as I think through my own life of trying to identify what I should be doing in my spiritual gifts, I think there is a deeper question that goes beyond what are my gifts. See, I don't think even if I told you what your gifts were, it would really answer your deep question. Because I think our deep question is not what are my gifts or how do I find my gifts. I think our deep question is what am I supposed to do? What does God want me to do? I'll trust that God gives me the ability to do what he wants me to do, but I just want to know what it is. You know, what does God want me to do? How do I find that out? Well, as a matter of fact, we learned this answer a couple weeks ago. I'm going to take you to that verse. It's in Romans chapter 12, and we'll look at it again. Romans chapter 12, verse 1 begins this way. Therefore, I urge you, brothers, this is the Apostle Paul writing, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Now, this is a good, important thing right here at the beginning. Paul is saying that real worship doesn't happen when you tell God he's cool. Real worship happens when you say, God, you've got me. Because real worship is when you say God is more valuable than anything else. And the most valuable thing to all of us is ourselves. And so it's not until you get to the place where you're ready to say, God, you're more valuable than I am, that you've even begun to worship. And so that's why Paul says, a living sacrifice, handing yourself over to God, putting yourself down and saying, God, you've got me. Do whatever you want to with me. That's the starting point with worship. But then he continues and he says, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. See, this is the thing we talked about a few weeks ago, and it's so important for us to recognize again all the time. It's this. God doesn't tell you what his will is for you and then say, get it done. It happens exactly in reverse order. What God says is, I want you to give yourself to me, and then I want you to begin to change your thinking. And as you serve me, and as you change your thinking, one of these days you'll realize what you're doing. And one of these days you'll be like, oh, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. It's what I've been doing for the last period of time. And so as God works in your life, he follows this pattern. Write this one down. I learn my purpose and my gifts as I serve. I learn my purpose and my gifts as I serve. We really wish it were the other way around. We really wish God would just hand to us a piece of paper telling us, these are the things I have given you the ability to do so you have confidence in them. And these are the things I want you to do, so go ahead and get them done. That's what we'd like. We'd like God to give us our assignment and then for us to say yes or no. But that's not the way God works, because he's not ready for you to say that no after he's revealed this stuff to you. Instead, he wants to hear your yes before he reveals it to you. And that's what he's always done. He says to Abraham, pick up, pack your bags, and go to the place I'll show you. And Abraham's like, where's that? God says, the place I will show you. And Abraham says, all right. So he starts walking, and he becomes the hero of our faith. So here's the deal. I learn my purpose and my gifts as I serve. This has been my ministry journey. I'll give you just another quick little story here if I can. When I was a kid, my dad is a pastor. Some of you know that. He's a pastor of a church out in California. I was raised in California. And I was always disturbed by something in our church. Okay, so I had to sit through the adult services in my parents' church a number of times. And they had a Sunday night service that I had to sit through. And then a Sunday morning, I also had to sit in that one. And it took a long time. And I was, you know, tending to fall asleep when my dad would talk, because he would talk. And so I came up with this idea. I realized early on that we could make things so much more efficient if we would just get my dad up on stage earlier and forget all that preliminary music stuff. You know, so we would come to church and there'd be this choir up on stage and they'd do their whoa thing. And then we'd have to open up these books and read these words that are all in weird sort of print with dots above them. And people are singing and the organ is playing and the piano is playing and my dad's up there waving his arms. And I'm like, oh, we could just save so much time if we skipped this. See, as a kid, I don't know what my problem was, but I hated music. I thought it was a waste of time. We would get in the car, my dad and my sister would turn on the radio, and I would say, "Dad, can we find some talk or something?" And he would switch over to the sports station and all this stuff. So I was just never into music. And there was this one time when I was sitting, like, as an eighth grader in chapel, in my Christian school, and there were these people up on stage that I knew, like, it wasn't adults, it wasn't teachers, it was like kids in the high school who were forming a band. And so there was this one kid up there playing keyboards and this other kid playing a guitar and some dude up there playing some drums. And I remember, literally, I said this to myself, "That's dumb. That's embarrassing." And I made a promise to God in my eighth grade year that I would never do something as silly or embarrassing as stand up in front of people and play music and ask them to sing with me. I was like, that's just ludicrous. But then something happened the summer after my eighth grade year where I just realized I was desperate to have a deeper relationship with God. And I didn't know what that meant or what it looked like. And so right before school started, my freshman year, right before school started, I remember saying a prayer and I said, "God, I don't know what I need to do to get closer to you. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to say yes. If you bring an opportunity to me, I'm just going to say yes." So then later on, a couple weeks later, I'm sitting in chapel and they're playing some music on the stage, and I'm sitting in the back row, and I'm just thinking to myself, "Oh, this is just so lame. Why can't we get done with this?" And a little voice kind of said to me, "You said you would say yes." And I said, "Fine." And so I started actually singing this song, and it was a song from Psalm 42, "As the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul longs for you." And as I sang those words, something changed in me. Something opened up with me. It was like the words that I was singing were the same as the feelings in my heart. The same thing that I had been hungry for is what this song was talking about. And God in that moment made a connection with me to say, "This is what I'm talking about. I'm paying attention to you, and I know you hunger after me. And this is one of the ways we begin it, because people for centuries, for thousands of years, have been hungering for me as well. And this is one of the ways we get into that." God ransacked my life that year. He changed my perspective on a lot of things. Later that year, I was in a missions trip to Mexico because I said yes again. And while I was on that missions trip, there was this dude playing a guitar, and I walked up to him and I was like, "Can you teach me how to play guitar?" I don't know why, but I had to say yes, okay? There was something going on and I had to say yes. So I walked up to this guy, asked him if I could play his guitar. He said, "Sure." He showed me the E minor chord, which is so easy, by the way. And he shows me this chord and I'm like, "I know how to play guitar." And he's like, "Yeah, you know how to play guitar. Keep it." I was like, "What?" I met that same guy during the summertime, and during the summertime, he told me, "Keep my guitar. Take it." He lived 6 hours away from me, but he gave me his guitar to keep for the summer so I could learn how to play. By the end of the summer, my dad bought me a guitar, and I was leading singing for my youth group at church, and eventually for the chapel services at my school. And the rest is kind of history, but here's the point. I had no idea what God would do to bless me, and I had no idea who God might bless through me when I said yes. The yes always came first. The bless always came later. Today, I could end my message right there, because we've got this ministry fair going right outside these doors, and I would love for you to go outside and write a yes down on a piece of paper. It's not a massive ministry fair. It's not a thing where we're going to try to coerce you into joining a ministry by giving you Oreos or something, although we should have brought Oreos. And so there's just these tables out there with just these little charts that kind of describe some of the ministries that are going on in our church in very brief fashion. And I want you to go out there and I want you to sign your name and say, "I want more information about this thing," or, "I'm volunteering for this particular thing. I could end my message right now and just be like, say yes. But before I do that, before we can end it, I feel like there's something more that I need to share with you. And it comes from a story Jesus tells us in Matthew chapter 25. And so I want to take you there right now. It's going to be Matthew 25 verses 14 through verse 30. And we're going to look at this passage. It's sometimes known as the parable of the talents. The most recent version of the Bible that we use translates it not as talent, but as bags of gold. But I need to give you some of the context there. The word there in the Greek behind the scenes isn't bags of gold. It's a word that we can translate or can just pronounce talent. And the fascinating thing is that a talent is it's a weight, it's a measurement, usually of gold or silver, but it was also a unit of money. And back in Jesus's day, a talent was worth 6,000 denarii. Now, I don't know if you know what a denarii is, but a denarius is a daily's amount of money. So a day's wage was paid with a denarius. So think about an average work day that you have, and that's one denarius. Multiply that by 6,000, and that's one talent, or in our translation here today, one bag of gold. So as we read that, I want you to think 6,000 work days, okay? 6,000 is a lot. In any given year, you're likely to work maybe 300 work days. That means it's going to take you 2 years to get to 600, and then 10 more times that to get to 6,000. We're talking like 20 years worth of work. If you saved every dime for 20 years, how much money would that be? One talent. Okay? That's where we're going with this when we read this story in just a little bit. The second thing that I want you to know as we're looking at Matthew 25 is that this is in the context of Jesus sharing with his followers what's going to happen at the end of time. And he's not saying these exact stories will happen at the end of time, but he's saying something's going to happen at the end of time. And I want you to be ready for it. And so we read this. We're going to pick it up in verse 14. And Jesus is talking about the coming of the kingdom of heaven. And he says, again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one he gave 5 bags of gold, to another 2 bags, and to another 1 bag, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received 5 bags of gold went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 bags more. So also the one with 2 bags of gold gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 bag went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received 5 bags of gold brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 bags of gold. See, I've gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with 2 bags of gold also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 bags of gold. See, I've gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who'd received 1 bag of gold came. Master, he said, I knew that you're a hard man, harvesting where you've not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I've not sown and gather where I've not scattered seed? Well, then you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. So take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. For whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have even what they have will be taken from them. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Part of this story is just frightening, okay? Where Jesus says there's going to be some servant of the king who, when the king comes back, hasn't done what the king expected. And so then the king is like, see ya. You're gone. Now, I don't want to get too much into the details about that. Jesus doesn't tell us that God is someday going to come back and see someone who's a follower of Jesus, and he's just going to say, I don't care about you. Because, see, we get into heaven not because of who we are and what we've done, but because of Jesus. But at the same time, reading passages like this scare me. And I'm wondering, okay, well, what really does God want from my life? I want to highlight for you a few things, four things from this story that I think help us understand what's going on. The first thing is that everything belongs to the master. Everything belongs to the master. This is a master. He's going away on a trip. Now, when he goes away on this trip, has he lost ownership to his estate? No, he still owns the estate. It's all still his estate. When he goes away on his trip, do the servants have a responsibility to look after that estate? Yes, they do. They have the same responsibility while he's away on the trip as they do while he's there. No responsibility changes whatsoever. They have the same responsibility. He does not have to give them bags of gold. Right? He doesn't need to say, I'm going to give you this bag of gold, now take care of it, because they're already supposed to take care of it. They're already the servants of the estate. The master owns everything. But he has chosen to give something to them, so that they can hands-on manage it. And he gives one guy more than he gives the other guys. 5, 2, 1. 10, 5, 1. He gives different amounts to different people depending on what they have. Okay, so, but depending on their responsibility, their level of responsibility. So the first thing is, it's still all the master's. He hasn't actually given it to them. The second thing is that the master is coming back. He's coming back. Now, this is important because, see, it's all his. He's handed it to these people. They're supposed to do something with it, and he's going to come back and check. The third thing is that faithfulness gets rewarded. I want you to pay attention to two tiny little things. If you still have the passage open in your Bibles, or if you're on the live event, scroll backwards a little bit. Take a look at verse 21, and then also look at verse 23. Verse 21 is when the master gives approval to the guy who was given 5 bags of gold and doubled it. And 23 is the master's comment to the guy who was given 2 bags of gold and doubled it. Now, if you're the kind of person who can pay attention to two things at once, you will notice they are exactly the same. The words spoken to each of them are exactly the same. Now, this is important. See, he gave 5 bags of gold to one guy because that guy's more responsible. And he did an amazing thing. He doubled 5 into 10. He gave 2 bags of gold to another guy because he was a little less responsible. And he did an amazing thing. He doubled 2 into 4. At the end of the day, the disparity between 10 and 4 is still huge. But the master says exactly the same thing to each of them. Listen, I want you to know that we have a tendency as human beings to compare ourselves with other people. And I will look at other people and their gifts and I will say, man, I wish I had that gift. Or I wish I had that amount of that gift. Not like I have, the amount that I have. Or something. I will compare myself to other people. You will compare yourself to other people. And this is what we all do. We say, I don't have that much, therefore maybe I'm not that valuable. Or I don't have that much, therefore maybe I'm not that important. Here's the thing, the master, he knows. He knows that he gave 5 to one guy and he gave 2 to another guy. And he's okay with that. And the master isn't going to judge dude with 5 based on the behavior of dude with 2. And he's not going to judge the guy with 2 based on the behavior of the guy with 5. And he's going to do the same thing when he looks at you. He's not going to look at you and judge you on the standards of the gifts he gave to someone else. But if you are faithful with what he's given you, well done. Good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a little. I will give you more. Come and join me in my happiness. Just be faithful. No matter how much has been given, don't compare yourself. Be faithful with yours and the reward is for faithfulness. But one more thing that you need to pay attention to this parable, and this is the one that begins to really challenge me. Faithfulness requires risk. I learned this story from a very early age, being part of church, going to Christian school, all this stuff. I learned this story from a very early age. I learned this story so early that I didn't understand how money worked. And so I remember reading the story or hearing the story, and someone would say something like this: he should have given it to the bankers so that at least it would have gotten interest. And I thought to myself, how's that work? By the way, how'd that guy turn 5 into 10? How do you do that? How did that guy turn 2 into 4? And what would giving it to the bankers do? I mean, you just hand it to the bank. Well, and my dad said, well, interest, it causes it to grow. And there was this moment in my life where I like had this vision in my head of my money, all my little quarters sitting on a shelf in a bank. And if you just give it enough time, the interest angels come. And the quarters just kind of duplicate. And you know, now you can see it in the Harry Potter movie, you know, where they touch something and it all duplicates in the Gringotts vault. I thought that was what like actually happened. And so I thought my money was just be sitting on it. And I thought to myself, well, I can let it sit in my bedroom. And so I took my money and I put it out on the shelf and I just watched it. And then I left it there for like a month. And no matter how long I left it there, nothing happened to it. Do you know why? Because that's not how money grows. Do you know how money grows? Do you know how money doubles? It only gets larger when you get rid of it. In some sort of an arrangement that obligates someone else to bring more of it back to you. It only grows if you get rid of it. If you get it out of your hands. Think about this for a moment. There's this one dude, and he gets one talent, one bag of gold, and he knows the master. And this master always wins. This master always gets results from his business endeavors. This master always finds success. And now I'm holding one little bag of gold, and I'm afraid. This is too risky. If I put it out there and it doesn't work, then I'm going to be empty-handed with 6,000 days' wages that I'm going to have to owe this guy. I just don't know if I can handle this. It's too scary. What I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure I still have it when it's all said and done. I'm going to bury it in the ground so when he comes back, I'll be able to give it back to him. But I'm not going to risk this thing because it's too scary. But then think about these other guys. See, you don't look at the guy with 5 bags of gold and just think he somehow miraculously is this amazing businessman who can turn 5 into 10. He's not like Midas, you know, just touch things and turn them to gold. I got to let you in on a little secret. The only way for him to turn 5 into 10 is if at some point in the middle, he had 0. I got 5 from the master. I emptied it all out. And before the master came back, I got it back. I had what I had. And I emptied myself out, and it came back more. Being faithful doesn't mean watching your money on a shelf, holding on to your gift in your hand. Being faithful means emptying it out in hope and in faith that it's going to come back. And here's the one piece of the story that I think our little guy with only one bag should have known. His master's money always comes back. His master always wins. His master never fails. And so if I use my master's money and put it out there, risk it all, it's going to come back. Now, I'm not sure exactly where you are in your life, but I want to give you this challenge that says no matter what I have been given, it's my job to invest it. Write this down. It's my job to invest whatever I've been given. I've got a list here at the bottom of some things that I consider extra spiritual gifts. Not extra spiritual as if they're more spiritual than other things, but they're just extra, okay? Additional spiritual gifts that I'm going to list out for you. I want you to write these things down. There are 5 of them. 1, I have been given time. 2, I have been given money. 3, I have been given passion. 4, I have been given pain. And 5, I have been given limits. Each one of these things is a gift from God. Some of them you want more for yourself. Some of them you want less for yourself. But each one of them is nonetheless a gift from God. How do you invest these things for God? You have been given them. We all have time. Sometimes people take your time and sometimes you give it away. Sometimes people take it and sometimes you give it. Now, you might be one of these Christian workaholics who says, man, I've got all this time. I need to work it all for God. And if I'm not doing it for God, I'm going to feel guilty. Maybe you're one of these Christian lazy people who's like, I've got all this time and I'm going to use it for myself. And if God wants some of it, well, then he's going to have to break into my world and just sort of grab it from me. I don't imagine any of you are in either one of those extremes. We're all somewhere in the middle there. And I don't want to be up here trying to make you feel guilty. So I'm just going to give you one little simple biblical principle for how to use your time. Okay? One day a week, 1 hour a day. One day a week, 1 hour a day is the time that I carve out to be God's and God's alone. One day a week, 1 hour a day. I'm going to give God one day a week. Now, God said, work 6 days and then take the seventh day off. I mean, he made that an actual command in the Old Testament. We live in a society where for some reason we end up with 2 days we're supposed to take off, and we actually take neither of them off. We either do all the work of partying, or we do all the work of housework or whatnot, or whatever it is. And I just want to encourage you to take at least one day a week where you're saying honestly and authentically, God, your day. Your day. And 1 hour a day. That hour might be spent reading, praying, studying the Bible, going to a church gathering, meeting with some other church friends, coaching another person, or you know what? Taking a nap. Because listen, most of us in this room know that you need it. Most of us around you are like, you could be so much more spiritual if you would just get some sleep. You would really be a blessing to my life if you would just go take a nap right now. So yes, you can give God 1 hour of your day, but you know, just wake up and get back on with some things. But so time, money is the exact same. God has given us a principle. Just give me the first 10%. Listen, I don't want to make you feel guilty about all this stuff, but I just want you to recognize that you have something. And you need to ask the question, am I investing it for God? Even if it's your pain, even if it's your regrets, even if it's the limitations that are currently on your life, there are things that I can do today that I couldn't do 10 years ago, and there are things that I could do 10 years ago that I can't do today. My limits change all the time. But who I am today in the limits that I have determines how God is gifting me. So what I want to end our time with today is to actually give you a spiritual gifts inventory. I told you I'd never do this, but then I made one up. So here it is on the back side of this little sheet. It's also in your live event. It's a gifts inventory, where it's just a bunch of questions, where you're asking yourself things like, given my limitations, what money do I actually have? Given my passions, what are some issues that are important to me? And at the very bottom of this page, it's just a question, how am I going to invest what I've been given? I'll give you an easy answer. Start today by going out into the lobby and saying yes, and see where God takes you. But also, start right now by giving God a yes. We're going to take some time just to reflect, just to be quiet before God. We're going to receive our communion. We're going to take our offering, and we're just going to spend this time, you and God, spend this time just opening your heart up and saying, God, I have downplayed the gifts you've given to me. I've downplayed the opportunities you've given to me. And I want to learn how to say yes. Help me find the yes. Help me say the yes. And then show me the blessing as I do so. Let me pray for you. Thank you for listening to this message. We believe that God has a full and fulfilling life in store for you. And we want to help you live it. For videos, resources, and more, visit us online at LafayetteCommunityChurch.com. And as always, we want to encourage you to plug into a Christ-following community of faith wherever you are. Life is a journey, and no one should ever walk alone.